Thank you. My name's Ryan. I'm an alcoholic. And I'm excited to be here. It's my last week. The last 2 weeks, I kind of talked about steps 1 through 9. So this week, I'll be talking about 10, 11, 12. So I hope to share a message that everyone can take something away from, though, you know. And the key takeaway is that, you know, as I've said before, recovery is possible. And change is possible, you know. I think everyone comes to AA and to recovery because on some level what they were doing wasn't working. And what I've been talking about the last 2 weeks and I'm going to talk about tonight is kind of the 12-step process of recovery that allows you to change. And I left off last week kind of talking about steps 8 and 9, which are about amends. And I talked about how you get an opportunity to right some of the wrongs you've made while drinking and while not drinking. And also some of the things that happen internally because of that. And that kind of leads us in to step 10, which starts on page 84. And and it says, step 10 suggests we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. We vigorously commence this way of living as we cleaned up the past. And it continues on page 84. And it says, continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When those crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. We discuss them with someone immediately and make amends quickly if we have harmed anyone. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance of others is our code. And I think this is a good part to talk about and start at. And the two things that jumped out to me were that they kind of talk about the importance of consistency and continuing to do it, you know? It suggests that we continue to take personal inventory, you know? And I think that my experience and a lot of other people's experience is kind of that I do something, it starts working, and then I stop doing it. It's interesting. It's kind of like a feature of alcoholism, you know? It's like the insanity described in step 2. That something will be working for me so well and I will still stop doing it, you know? And I'm sure if you've been in recovery long enough, you've met people who have come around for a while and you've watched them come in absolutely broken and you've watched them, like the light kind of turn back on in their eyes, you know, and you've watched them restore their family relationships, and then you maybe kind of just stop seeing them, you know, and it's sad, you know. It's one of the best parts of the program, I think, is watching people get better, and I think one of the worst parts is watching people either go back out or just stay stagnant until, you know, they kind of just disappear. And this step kind of reminds me, you know, it's something that I need to continue to do on a daily basis, you know. And the other thing that it talks about is the timing. You know, it says we ask God at once to remove them, you know. And I think that's not an accident. I think that for me, a lot of the times, if I don't do it at once, I never do it. I think that if I get in an argument and I don't right my wrong or fix it, a lot of the times I'm just like, oh, well, it's over with. You know, I'm over it, it's over with, and I don't have to deal with it now. And I think that when I kind of do it immediately, you know, I think it's just, it just puts me in a better place spiritually, and it allows it to kind of not happen as much, you know, because I can get in the habit of overlooking stuff until it builds up. And then I can find myself with these things they talk about. I can find myself with resentments, you know, with fears, and I can turn something that I could have addressed very quickly, and I can make it a problem, you know. And I think step 10 can be done very quickly, you know. A lot of times it can be done in a minute or two. You know, it doesn't take very long to call someone and talk about it and to make an amends, you know. But I think you get a lot out of it, you know. And that's the thing about step 10, 11, 12 that I found interesting. It's kind of like a good value, you know. It's like you get a lot out of it, and you don't really have to put much work in compared to some other things. At least for me, like, the first time I made an inventory, you know, it took me hours and hours to write down all my resentments and fears, and it took a long, long time. And then when I kind of do it at the end of the night with step 11, it's like, it really only takes me a couple minutes, you know? And it can really change the way that I feel and act if I neglect it for too long, you know? So my experience with steps 10 and 11, I'm kind of going to group them together, was that I didn't really do them much until stuff started to pop up, you know? I kind of neglected them a bit, you know. I kind of just found something that worked for me and just stopped growing for a little bit, you know. And kind of like sponsoring other people kind of motivated me to do it, you know. So I'm going to talk about step 12 later, but it's kind of cool how, you know, one of the things that I got from working with other people was kind of having to take a look at myself and if I was practicing what I was preaching, you know? So the next thing I wanted to point out was on the bottom of page 84. It talks about the 10-step promises. It says, "We have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol, for by this time sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from it like from a hot flame. We react sanely and normally. We will find that this happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude toward liquor had been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That is the miracle of it. We are not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we had been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We had not even sworn it off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky nor afraid. This is our experience. This is so long as we react, so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition." So that was another kind of gift of the program that kind of happened when I got up to this step, was that the way I looked at alcohol changed, you know. When I first got sober, I had this belief that it might be possible for me to stay sober for a while, but I would always kind of be some level of miserable, you know. Like, I might be able to white knuckle it and like stay sober for a little bit, and I wouldn't be having any fun, right? Like, I would, like, and then that was okay. Like, that was my punishment, you know. Like, I did a lot of damage, and my punishment is just to have a unhappy, dry life. And like, I was kind of okay with that. I was like, this is kind of what I deserve, you know? And then by doing this process of recovery and taking these spiritual actions and learning these spiritual tools, some of the things that I talked about earlier in my talks happened, which was that the way I felt internally changed. You know, the more I took spiritual actions, the more I tried to help people, the more I was honest, you know, the more I took esteemable actions, the more my self-esteem began to build, and the more I kind of just felt serenity and peace and happiness. And when I talk about the spiritual program, it's because, you know, a part of it is that, you know, like I talked about earlier, it's that I use alcohol to change the way I feel. And if the spiritual life makes me feel good, I don't have this obsession and compulsion to change the way I feel. And that talks, you know, and that's kind of what happened. You know, that's kind of what happened with this, is that I no longer felt the same pull from alcohol that I used to. You know, I used to just have this, you know, just kind of this belief that, you know, at some point I would drink again, and at some point, you know, just I wouldn't be able to take life sober, you know. But by doing this stuff, I kind of just changed, you know. And the way I looked at the world and also at alcohol changed, you know. And I found myself getting in situations where it was like, this isn't even appealing to me at all, you know? And that was like, I had never felt that way. You know, in my past history, if I ever had alcohol in front of me and I didn't want to drink, I basically just had to leave, you know? I wasn't capable of being in an environment with alcohol in it and enjoying it or even being present. And I found myself just being in these situations and being okay, you know. And I kind of, you know, they use the word miracle, and that's kind of what it was, you know. I used to put myself in these situations and, like, you know, it was really like I was hanging on for dear life not to drink, you know. And sometimes I would drink, and then I would also be in this situation where it's kind of like, dang, like I really didn't want that to happen and didn't plan on that to happen, you know? But at this point, you know, it's like the problem has been removed. And what does that look for me like for me today is that I could basically compare alcohol to, like, I don't know, maybe like dog food. It's just something that I don't consume, you know what I mean? It is not for me. Like, I am an alcoholic and I cannot safely drink alcohol, and I think that is a sane and normal reaction, you know. And I find myself in these situations, and, you know, if it's really making me uncomfortable, I will leave. But the threshold of what makes me uncomfortable today is a lot higher than it used to be, you know. It used to be just being there was uncomfortable, and now I find myself comfortable in my own skin in almost any situation. And that's because I have confidence in myself, in my higher power, in the program of recovery, in my support system. You know, I have faith that was built up over time. You know, I came in and I had no faith, you know. It was like, you know, I heard a speaker one time talk about how it was like kind of trying like an auto mechanic for the first time. You know, you go there and you don't have any faith. You know, you got a little bit of hope that this auto mechanic knows what he's doing, you know, and he's not going to completely rip you off, at least for me, because I don't know anything about cars. But, you know, you go there and he does a good job and gives you good service and is fair and all that. And then, you know, you might go back, you know, and if you do it for years and years and years, you're going to have a level of faith. And that's kind of what recovery was like for me. You know, after I did this for long enough, I just had an unshakable faith in the program of recovery and AA as a whole, you know. And I know that people are people, and people have personalities, you know, and people make mistakes, but this program as a whole and the spiritual principles behind it, you know, have never let me down, you know. And these two steps, particularly 10 and 11, I guess 12 too, but they remind me of something that I used to hear a lot when I first came into recovery, you know, and that was that I'll get drunk on yesterday's recovery, you know. It was that I have this daily reprieve, you know, and that if I don't continue to set right my wrongs, if I don't continue to work on my fears and my resentments and try and help people, then I might not feel so good and comfortable internally, you know? And if that happens for long enough, I think that I will lose this miracle that was promised to me. You know, I think that a drinker or a drug might start looking appealing if I don't do those things, you know? So the importance of consistency, continued action, and the timing of it are really important for me when working these steps. And I'm going to move on a little bit to step 11 now. I'm going to read on page 86. There's kind of some suggestions for practices in the evening and in the morning. And page 86, it reads, "When we retire at night, we constructively review our day. Were we resentful, selfishness, dishonest, or afraid? Do we owe an apology? Have we kept something to ourselves which should be discussed with another person at once? Were we kind and loving toward all? What could we have done better? Were we thinking of ourselves most of the time? Or were we thinking of what we could do for others, of what we could pack into the stream of life? But we must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection, for that would diminish our usefulness to others. After making our review, we ask God's forgiveness and inquire what corrective measures should be taken." So I started doing this every night, but only a couple years ago. And I have been sober since 2011. And I used to kind of sit at night and just kind of review my day. You know, I didn't really, I mean, I went through various periods of like journaling and doing kind of different stuff at night. But a few years ago, someone asked me to sponsor them. And he said, "I have an app on my phone and I answer all these questions on it. And then I used to email it to my sponsor every day." And he's like, "Can I continue? Can I do that? You know, can I do that with you now that you're my sponsor?" And I was like, "Sure." You know, so every day in the morning, I would have an email from him, and it would kind of be telling me about where he was selfish, dishonest, or who he owed an apology to, or what he could have done better the night before, or all these questions that it asks here. And I thought it was really cool. And it was kind of like helpful for me, like as a sponsor, because I could always, not always, but I kind of just like knew where he was at before he would even talk on the phone. Which was kind of helpful. I mean, it definitely saved some time, at least. but it inspired me to download the app and start doing it with my sponsor. You know, like one of the cool things about being in recovery is like you know, this guy asked me to sponsor him and thought he was going to get a lot out of it. And like, I wound up getting a lot out of it because I picked up a new tool, you know. I started doing this every night. That was maybe in like 2018. I've probably, and it saves them, so you can like go back and check. I could like literally tell you I could literally tell you if I was fearful on any given day in 2018, which is you know, not really very practical, but it's definitely interesting. But you know, the practical application of it is that if I so now I email to my sponsor every day, and if I email like my sponsor that I'm resentful for a couple days in a row, he kind of gives me a call and he's like, "Hey Ryan, like the same resentment popped up 3 times this week. You know, what are we doing about it? You know, are we gonna write about it? Are we gonna take an action that's different? Are we, you know, and are we gonna come up with a plan to work on it?" You know, so it was like, it was just another way for me to grow. Because if my goal really is to just be a little bit better today than I was yesterday, then this is very helpful for me in doing that, you know, by just not allowing things to get out of hand because I'm constantly inventorying them. You know, it's like just like the 4-step inventory. It's like a company that doesn't take an inventory, you know, might go broke because it's harder to tell what's actually going on if I'm not writing it down and talking to other people about it, you know? So for me, it was very helpful to do this at night, you know? And it still is, and it's still something I do, you know? And then the awakening reading at the middle of 86 says, "On awakening, let us think about the 24 hours ahead. We consider our plans for the day. We ask God to direct our thinking, especially that it be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, or self-seeking motives. Under these conditions, we can employ our mental faculties with assurance, for after all, God gave us brains to use. Our thought life will be placed on a much higher plane when our thinking is cleared of wrong motives. In thinking about our day, we may face indecision. We may not be able to determine which course to take. Here we ask God for inspiration, an intuitive thought or decision. We relax and take it easy. We don't struggle. We are often surprised how the right answer comes after we've tried this for a while." So I really like this reading, you know, and I often direct people to this reading. You know, after you've been sober for, at least for me, after I was sober for a little while, people would always ask me questions, you know, and a lot of them I am absolutely unqualified to answer. But I think that doing this can be very, very helpful for me and for other people. And particularly when we face indecision, you know. Like I had a guy I was sponsoring who asked me, "Hey Ryan, do you think I should sell my house?" And I was like, I have never even bought a house, let alone sold a house. You know, like I'm absolutely unqualified to give you, you know, to give you any sort of advice. Like you should probably talk to a realtor and your wife. but what I told him was that, you know, that what you could do when you face indecision is that we ask God for inspiration, you know, an intuitive thought or decision. We relax and take it easy. We don't struggle, you know. And when he was going through the process of selling his house, he told me that he could kind of get this feeling when it was God's will and when it wasn't God's will, when he was trying to force it, you know? And I think that's the case for me a lot of the times, you know? I want to make plans, I want to run the show, but like I kind of talked about with step 3 and step 6 and 7, you know, when I turn it over, when I let go, I just find myself just having so much more peace and serenity, you know, just having such an easier time, you know, not having the same problems of trying to just make everything work the way I want it to, you know. So I like this reading, you know, and I try and do it. You know, I used to have it, this page printed out and on my nightstand, and I don't anymore, but I still try and do this, you know. I still try and take one of the first actions when I wake up to turn it over, you know. And and I think I'm going to move on to step 12 now. Which is... There we go. Which is sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. Step 11. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. So, I kind of talked about the spiritual awakening a little bit, you know, and that was kind of just that change, you know, that change that happened from doing the steps. And I haven't talked much about carrying this message, but, well, maybe I have, but on a specific level, you know, I think it's important to kind of follow the suggestions given in the Working with Others chapter, you know. There's some very specific suggestions on how we can be effective, you know. And I think for me, I think that the reason this program worked so well was because people followed this when they were working with me. And we can go to page 93 and read a couple of them. Let's see. So they talk about at the top of the page, it says, tell him exactly what happened to you. Stress the spiritual feature freely. If this man be agnostic or atheist, make it emphatic that he does not have to agree with your conception of God. The main thing is that he isn't willing to believe in a power greater than himself, and that he lived by spiritual principles. When dealing with this person, you'd be better to use everyday language to describe spiritual principles. And then, a little bit further, on page 95, it talks about how you should never talk down to an alcoholic from a moral or spiritual hilltop. Simply lay out the kit of spiritual tools for his inspection. Show him how they worked. Offer him friendship and fellowship. Tell him that if he wants to get well, you will do anything to help. And I think that was super important to me. You know, I think that if someone talked down to me when I was just coming to AA and I was in one of the most pained and vulnerable points in my life, I don't think I would have been very receptive to what they were saying. And I think that when I let people know that I've been where they are, and this is what my life is like today, I think that is just so much more effective than any sort of just this preaching or this kind of you have to do this type of attitude. You know, it's a simply lay the kit of spiritual tools at his feet, you know. And I believe our program is meant to be suggestive only, you know. And that means, you know, it means if you want what I have, you're going to do what I do, you know. And if not, like, that's okay, you know. If not, our job is to still offer you friendship and fellowship. You know, our job is to be of maximum service. So I'm not going to try and, you know, force my will on you or tell you have to do this or that or sell you on anything. I'm going to share the most important thing I have to share, which is my experience. You know? And I think that, you know, that was one of the things that really sold me personally, internally on AA. You know, if I rolled up to work with my sponsor the first time and he, like, yelled at me, I don't think I ever would have got sober, you know? I think that he also expected me to be a sick person, you know? When I didn't do things I said I was going to do, he didn't slam the phone on me and tell me to find a new sponsor. You know what I mean? He offered me friendship and fellowship and was kind and loving and patient. And that's what sold me on AA. And I had one final experience that I just want to share, which was that I was not a first-time winner, as they say in AA. My first time, I got 90 days a handful of times. And there was one time where I was working with my sponsor. And, like, I was, still drinking. And he was still working with me. And there was, like, one time where I worked with him when I was, like, really drunk. And I remembered asking him, like, after I, like, was fully sober and fully in the program, I remember asking him, why did you waste your time working with me when I was not even sober? And he said something that stuck with me. He said two things that stuck with me. One of them was really funny. One of them made a lot of sense. But he said, I wanted to plant a seed. He said, I thought that there was a good chance you would actually sober up soon, and you did. And the second thing he said was, it was also probably much worse for you than it was for me. He's like, if you remember, we were just kind of, you know, hanging out and reading the book, and like, I was having a fine time, you know? And I remember thinking about it, and I was like, I was not. Like, I was worried that he was going to know I was drinking. I was, you know, I was just not having a good time. But he planted a seed, you know? And I've had people tell me that I planted a seed, you know? And it's not always in a timely manner. You know, I had one guy I worked with in 2013, maybe. Like, I sponsored him in 2013. And he just could not or would not follow our program of action, you know? But, like, I still did what the book suggested. I offered him friendship and fellowship and invited him to meetings and picked him up when I could and did all those good things. And then, like, you know, maybe a couple years ago, he messaged me. And this is, you know, maybe like 8 years later, he messages me. And he's like, hey, Ryan, I wanted to let you know, I'm 6 months sober now, and you planted a seed when you worked with me however many years ago, you know, and it's like, wow, you know, it's like, you know, it's just, you never know what's going to plant a seed, you never know what's going to happen, but I do believe that these suggestions work. You know, I believe that the people here know what they're doing, you know? And one of the best things I get to do is sponsor people too, you know, just watching people just kind of get out of this hopeless state of mind, you know? And it's just like, I know, I enjoy it so much because I know what it feels like, you know? And it's just another gift of the program, you know? So with that being said, I think I've covered all the material I wanted to. And I think that before I end my talk, I just wanted to say thank you to Mark for asking me to speak tonight and the last couple weeks. And I just wanted to say thank you to the group for having me. And with that, I will open it up to you guys for the sharing for the rest of the meeting. Thank you.